to Tuned to Yesterday, delivering programs from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Coming up in this hour, science fiction. Later on, we hear Exploring Tomorrow with a story flashback. But right now, it's Ernest Canoy's tale, The Martian Death March, on Dimension X. This would prove to be one of the more popular stories from science fiction radio during its yesteryear, being repeated on X-1 a few years later. This first heard on January 14th, 1951, on NBC.
Adventures in time and space. Transcribed in future tense. On stage tonight, Dimension X.
The Cross Mars Highway runs that way now, from the Calmac Canal on the equator, north to the highlands, with a water station every 20 miles and a radar pickup and towing service running 24 hours a day. But there wasn't any highway 30 years ago in 97. There was desert. Hot, burning desert. Sands shifting and blowing, piling up around the empty shells of the ruined cities, ancient when man on Earth was living in caves. I lived at the edge of the Calmac Canal then with my father. He was a prospector, searching the surrounding desert with sonar probe and Geiger counter, scratching just enough ore from under the Martian sands to pay for our grub stake the next year. I remember he was in the Adamson Digger in the North Quadrant when I came running out that day.
Coming, Dad, across the desert.
You sure?
I saw them. They're a couple of miles out.
How many cars?
They're on foot.
On foot across the desert?
Honest, Dad, I saw them.
You sure it wasn't a light reflection off the canal?
No, it was dark against the sand.
I don't like that. You run back and get the rifles out. I've got to pull the digger into the shed.
Is there going to be fighting, Dad?
I don't know. Got a whole year's ore piled out back in the bins. Ain't gonna lose it to no claim jumpers. You get back to the shack and break out those rifles. See that they're loaded, you hear? And jump.
Dad had three surplus army rifles and a couple of homemade grenades made out of ore cans stuffed with Adamson A explosives. We crouched inside the shack waiting. The shadow of the water tower in the doorway grew longer as the quick Martian dusk settled down over the desert.
There they come, Al. There's two of them.
There's something funny about that second one. Look, he's all spindly, and his head's funny.
Yeah, his head's funny, all right. Now, that's a Martian.
I never saw one off the reservation before.
There hasn't been one, not in 10 years. I don't like this.
Here they come, into the door,
you... Now, you remember what I told you. Line up the sights and just squeeze the trigger.
Hello! Hello there!
Now, Dad?
Hello!
Wait a minute. What do you want?
Water!
What are you gonna do, Dad?
Where do you come from? Wall swim!
Are you lying? That's 100 miles across the desert.
I know! That's where I came from. My tank is empty. I need water.
Well, drop your gear and come up here slow. Tell that Martian to stay where he is. All right, now. Who are you?
My name is John.
John, huh? What are you doing with that spider?
His name is Kantalka.
I don't care what his name is. What's a human doing with a Martian?
I found him in the dry bed of Calmac Canal, nearly dead of thirst.
Probably ran off from the reservation.
When our brothers are caged, they seek freedom.
Brothers? Those spiders?
All living creatures are our brothers, on Mars as on Earth.
Oh, wait a minute.
Bird all Nostrum at False Wells told me there was a screwball hedge preacher over there hollering about letting the spiders loose off the reservations.
Let no man call his life his own. No man, nor tribe, nor nation.
I guess that's you, all right. Yeah, Bert told me they called you Crazy John. Oh, well, I don't suppose there's any harm in you. Go on, fill up your tank at the air still. You can even have supper with us.
We would be happy to.
We? What do you mean, we?
Conto Carr and myself.
That spider? Oh, no. I ain't having a Martian sitting down to eat with me. Now, you come on, no.
Thank you, sir, no. Where my brother is not welcome, I cannot go.
Man filled his tank at the Airstill Tower, and the Martian went through the ash pile for half-burned fuel brick. When we went in the house for supper, I could see them silhouetted against the fire. The old man with his wild hair and beard, and the thin, spidery arms and legs of the Martian.
Dad?
What now?
Were the Martians always on the reservation?
Since the Outpost 3 massacre, they have been.
What was that?
Back before you were born, they lived wild in the mountains up north.
Were they fierce?
Fierce enough. There's only one place for them spiders. Behind wire.
Yeah, it sure is.
Out in the dooryard, the campfire flickered at the base of the water tower. The first of the Martian moons had set. The other wouldn't rise for several hours. I could hear the sandpipers out in the desert as I stood there. The old man and the Martian were sitting on the ground, huddled close to the fire. It gets cold fast on the desert when the sun goes down.
Did you, boy? You can come up to the fire if you'd like.
My dad wouldn't like it.
All right.
But I'm not afraid of no spider.
No, there's nothing to be afraid of.
How come his arms are all skinny?
Ask him.
Does he talk?
Yes, his name is Kantal Kar.
It is, huh? Hello.
Hello, boy.
He talks funny.
It is not my language.
Why isn't he on the reservation? You can get in trouble helping spiders to escape.
He is my brother. He was caged. When my brothers were in bondage, I came to them and said, "Lo, the time has come for deliverance."
You talk funny, too. Is it true that you want to let all the spiders off the reservation?
No man has the right to imprison the innocent.
Do they really call you Crazy John?
I have been called many things.
You really think we ought to let all those old spiders off the reservation?
Boy, we die here in the desert. We die in the sun and of the sicknesses you have brought from Earth.
That's because Martians are just weak. I bet I could knock you down myself.
You could. We are a different people. We have not the strength of muscle of Earth men. But we will not stay here to die.
You won't get off the reservation. The patrol takes care of that, all right. They won't let any stinking old spiders out.
Even in the minds of children is planted the poison of evil. How long? How long?
That night through the window, I could see the flicker of the old man's campfire. He was walking up and down now, shouting, singing hymns, verse after verse, his white beard catching the light as he passed behind the fire. The Martian sat slumped over, his thin, spindly arms folded across the huge barrel chest that had developed over the centuries as the air of Mars thinned and escaped into space. In the morning, I looked out and they were gone. Looking back now, we wonder how they did it. The high-voltage wire around the reservation carried a fatal charge. The patrolmen in the tower had 50-caliber machine guns. The desert around the camp was mined heavily. And yet, at dawn, August 7th, 1997, they broke out. I was down at the dried-up canal bed hunting sandpipers when my father came running after me.
Al! Al!
Here I am.
Come on, back to the house.
What's the matter, Dad?
Now shut up and run!
What is it?
Spiders busted loose. Bert Alstrom radioed in.
They coming here?
They're headed this way, murdering devils.
Did they kill anybody?
Six patrolmen when they busted through the wire. Now get inside.
What are you going to do, Dad?
Wire a keg of Adam's and A across the gate. You get in there and get the guns out.
I got the rifles and shoved a full clip in each one. Then I slipped a primer fuse in the homemade grenades and lugged them out on the porch. Dad was running lead wires back to the detonator from a half keg of Adamson A he'd set across the gate.
That's set. Give me one of those rifles.
Will they be here soon?
You can see the dust over the rise.
There they are, Dad. There they come.
Now, wait a minute, wait a minute. Hold up. I want to get a good shot. Let them get closer.
Dad, that's Crazy John up in front. There. He's taller than the spiders. You can see his beard.
Yeah, you're right. The renegade rat. Probably helped him break out of the reservation. Now, listen, Al. If anything happens to me, you light out back to the shed. You can hide out in the empty ore bins till they go away. You got that?
All right, Dad. The spider's shouting something, Dad.
That's probably a trick. Get down a little, Al. You're in the way. Yeah, I got him clear now. Right in the head. No, up a little now. I got him. I got him.
Dad, look out. They've got guns.
Down. Get down.
Dad. Dad.
Get out, Al. Get out of the shed.
But, Dad, you're hit.
Go on. The spiders are going to rush. Get going.
I can't leave you.
Shut up. Get out of here. You hear? Get out there.
Back through the house to the shed. And behind me, I could hear the Martian sweeping up to the dooryard. Then suddenly, the ground shook. And I could feel the dull concussion waves hit my ears as the Adamson A exploded. I could hear the high whispered screams of the Martians and the rattle of fragments on the metal roof of the shed. I dived into the empty ore bin and slammed the hatch almost shut. I crouched there, watching the thin edge of light that filtered through, listening to the brittle tramping of Martian feet on the board floor of our house. The shooting had stopped, and the shouts had died away. I sat there waiting, and then suddenly a shadow fell across the edge of light, and the hatch slid open on top of me.
You leave me alone. I'll kill you.
Boy, I've been looking for you.
Where's my dad? What did you do to my dad?
He's dead.
You killed him. You and those spiders. You killed my father.
Come out of there, boy.
You let go of me, you murderer.
Come on out.
I'll kill you. I'll kill all those stinking murdering spiders.
They are our brothers, boy. Your father shot without warning in the fire was returned against my orders. You did not have to shoot. Our brothers came in peace. They're going home to their mountains. We came to get water for the journey.
You mean you just wanted water? You... Dad. Dad.
We'll be following us soon.
We must go.
And the boy?
We'll have to leave him here with water and supplies. He's can't. It's straight across the desert to the mountains. He'll die.
John, since the Earthmen came to Mars, the Highlanders have died like the grass in the hot sun. We are going home. One life cannot stop us.
They tore the Adamson Airstale from the tower and mounted it on poles. They piled our supplies in the yard and loaded on their backs. And then they started. I marched with the old man at the head, and the column stretched out behind us on the desert. Women, children, the sick and the dying, some showing the signs of the diseases that were trivial to the Earthmen, but deadly to the Martians. Chickenpox, German measles, and the bronchial infections that raced through the vast areas of Martian lungs, eating away the tissue till death came in a last spasm of coughing. I turned to look back at our house, but the sun was behind it, blinding red. And the old man pulled me around as he marched, his eyes fixed on the horizon where far to the north rose the cool mountains that were the ancient home of the Highlanders. Fourteen of the Martians died the first day. They dropped to the side of the column when they could go no further and died. The march went on. The sun burned down in the day. The air shimmered with the heat. And at night, under the cold racing light of the twin moons, the winds cut at tattered clothing and scattered the feeble fires that dotted the campsites. On the fifth day, we swung wide to avoid a mining settlement, but not wide enough. They were in ambush behind a pile of rocks.
Down! Down, boy!
Why aren't the spiders fighting back?
Go on back, all of you! We give you your last chance to get back to the reservation. I will scoop the whole lot of you.
Let us go in peace.
Who's that? You. What are you doing with them spiders?
That crazy John. A voice cries out to the universe. Your brothers must have justice.
We'll give them justice.
I shall lead them home. Home to the promised rest. Home to the mountains. March forward. March forward.
They marched, and the Earthmen fired as fast as they could reload. A Martian would spin and drop as the heavy caliber bullets shook his bones to brittle fragments. But the march went on. We wound across the desert in wild zigzags, following the paths the old man had traveled through the years. Once a patrol plane hovered on the horizon and then shot away. The days went on, the weeks, and the Martians died. They died of exhaustion. They died of the disease we had given them. And they died of thirst. The Adamson still could produce 27 units of water an hour, no more. And on that, they died of thirst.
Yeah, boy. Here's your water.
That's more than the others got.
Take.
You're giving me your water.
It will be provided to me. He that brings justice to his brothers will drink deep of the water of righteousness. He that leads his brothers to their promised rest will savor the cool draughts of the mercy of heaven. Here.
Calmec Canal to Fever Dip, past the towering mesas of the Higgins Badlands, across the dry sea bottoms, they marched. On the 54th day of the march, we halted at evening. The air was thinner and colder now. The rations had long since been exhausted. And around the campfires, they cooked the hard, bitter kernels of the dog bushnut that grew on spiny stalks like earth cactus. I lay down to sleep wrapped in the old man's coat. Early in the morning, before sunrise, I woke suddenly. The ground mist that had covered the desert the night before was lifting slowly, and I saw the old man standing by the burned-out fire, the vapor swirling around his legs, and the cold light of the false dawn edging his wild beard.
Go back to sleep, boy.
I can't.
The end is near. I've led them through the wilderness, dry shod across the seas. And before us lie the mountains.
It's over. We're there.
I have led them to their home. And I must go back to the desert.
You mean alone?
No. Even now, I hear a voice in the wind. Carry the message to the men of Earth. Bring to this new world the message of the old. All beings created in the universe are my brothers. And he that harms my brother harms me. Goodbye, boy. You'll be safe now.
Found him 500 yards from the camp, dead. He had given me his water. He had divided his ration among the sick. And yet his gaunt, tall body had lasted till the march was done, till the mountains were in sight. For now the mist rose, and before us towered the highlands, the tall green mountains, and the cool sky. The march was over. Of the 7,000 Martians who started, 900 were alive. They gathered now on the rise of ground and faced the hills. Their thin bodies wavered as they stood, and some dropped to the ground as they stood there. But there was a light of hope in their large, staring eyes. Most of them had died, but they had died on the way home. And now the march was over. Then the patrol planes were spotted on the horizon. And within 10 minutes, they had landed. The Martians stood silently as the squads piled out and set up the 50 caliber machine guns and petroleum gel flamethrower.
All right, you spiders, hands up and stay together. Gather in a bunch and don't try anything. Sergeant.
Yes, sir.
Shoot the first spider that moves and shoot to kill.
All right, come on.
Where's the boy?
There was a boy reported.
Here I am.
You all right, kid? They didn't hurt you?
No, I'm all right. John gave me his water ration.
Oh, the leader, eh? I've got a warrant for him. Where is he?
There. He's dead.
Oh. Well, just as well. I'd hate to be him in front of a settler's jury.
What are you going to do to them?
The spiders. You see those transport planes coming in? We're going to ship them all back to the reservation where they belong.
You mean take them all back?
Lock, stock, and barrel. They'll be back behind wire before tonight.
All right, Sergeant. Get them broken up in groups of 50. The first transports are coming in.
You can't. You can't do that.
What are you talking about, kid?
Oh, you can't take them back. They're home. John said they were home.
You take it easy, kid. You're all right. Now we rescued you. You don't have to worry about these spiders anymore.
You can't take them back. It isn't fair. I won't let you.
Yeah.
I won't let you. I won't let
you. Hey, let go of me. Sergeant.
Yes, sir.
You can feel this crazy kid off me.
They're home. Can't you understand? You can't take them back.
All right, now, kid. Easy. Must be a shark, Ken.
You spiders, step it up, move along. These transport planes, roll over now. You're headed right back to the reservation.
They separated them in groups of 50 and loaded them in the planes. 900 out of 7,000. And soon the first big-bellied ships waddled out on the hard sands and lifted slowly into the air. Back to the south, flying over the trail of dead and dying who started on the march to the highlands, the march to home.
Come on now, kid. You you'll feel better as soon as you get back to civilization. And don't worry about the spiders. They're taken care of now.
Once more at the green mountains, towering through the mist. And then, just before the motor raced, I saw John. Crazy John. Propped up against a dognut bush where the Martians had placed him. The wind from the south gave the wild hair and beard a rippling life. He faced the hills, the home, and the rest he had promised his brothers. He led them through the wilderness of Mars.
Be with us at this same time next week for another adventure into the unknown world of Dimension X.
Dimension X on Tuned to Yesterday from January 14th, 1951 on NBC. The story was written by Ernest Canoy, who was a staff writer for NBC and would later work heavily in television. And to share some of his thoughts on radio and writing, here's an excerpt of an interview with Ernest Canoy from the Archive of American Television, conducted by Sonny Parrish in October of 1998.
You were looking at it, and you had to describe what do they do. On radio, you were down to one sense. That was just hearing. What do you hear? So that in radio drama at that time, you find that middle parenthesis with the sound effects frequently. And what the sound effects people did was very, very significant in terms of making it happen. Now, as you got into television, you had to shift gears yourself and say, now, wait a minute, this is closer to the theater than it is to radio. I have to say what they do. Does she get up? Does she sit down? What does she look like? Where are they moving? Where is this happening? None of which, of course, was true in radio. In radio, you had other sneaky ways of indicating where are you. So that if it takes place in a train, in a sleeping car, in television you describe, they say, it takes place in a sleeping car. Radio, you have to say sound, the ongoing train, distant hooting of a something or other, a porter coming by saying, your bed is ready. You have to find the way of doing it with the ear that in some ways made television a lot simpler. Because you didn't have to worry about that. You didn't have to, the fellow is standing there and he says, look, he says, I'm going to pick up my gun and I'm going to aim at you. And I'm telling you, you have to do that in radio. Because otherwise you don't know what he does. But in television, you just say, picks up the gun. So that life was in many ways simpler. And in live television, life was simpler in the sense that there was a limit to the number of sets you could have. So scenes tended to be longer and more completed as they would be in theater. Now, radio, you could jump like crazy. Radio, you could do what you now do in film, which has the short quality of things. You could do a montage in radio, and in early television, in live television, you really couldn't do much of a montage. It would take you forever to figure it out, and it would be too dangerous because everything could go wrong. But radio, all the time, you could manage it in that fashion. So there were interesting differences. Also, at that point in the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, when radio drama was the popular form, the big commercial popular form. What was called for was active drama. That is, you wanted the story, you wanted to hear the people, you wanted to have the action on. At the same time, in one tiny area, which would probably be Columbia Workshop, people like Norman Corwin and others were doing their own thing, and there it was not as much drama as the writer wanting to you to hear his writing, so that you got long narrations, you got poetry, you got all of these things. Now what's happened is, in later years, as the commercial dramatic media moved from radio into television, what was left in television was public television and other things of that sort, and the Norman Corwin poetry as drama triumphed. So that these days, if you rarely hear something that's supposed to be dramatic on the radio, you'll hear one voice talking a long time, and you will seldom hear acting. You will not hear a fight, which they used to do on radio, with the you know, and the sound, and the sound effects man is making the fight, and the actors are grunting, and all of that is going on. No longer. But that was what was part of radio writing in those days.
Well, Hal Cantor, the writer, he calls it, working from radio to television, he said, radio is a theater of the mind. Television was theater of the mindless, because it was that. The mind, in radio, they had all that going on, and you had to envision it. Where in television, you had to make that translation for people.
Yes and no.
Right.
I mean, you can say that radio was more imaginative in the sense that you had to produce the physical look, so that you had people who swore they knew what the heroine in the soap opera looked like. They didn't know that it was a 48-year-old, rather stout lady, you know, who started her acting career many years ago. But in television, there it is. And that is true. Now, whether television need be mindless opens a different issue, a different definition of mindless, yeah.
But he was just talking kind of in a general way.
Yes, in terms of how it is appreciated, radio is more to listen to and understand a radio show. You had to imagine something. That's correct. In television, you're looking at it and it's there. That is true.
Did you ever do adaptations, say, from one of your radio scripts? Like a science fiction, for instance, if you're creating this world of science fiction and then you had to take that similar script and do it for television, did that create limitations for you? Like you said, the man with a third eye, and that was kind
well,
of
Well, what you did
it.
Is you limited largely. That is why, if you were clever and you were doing fantasy in television, you did it where the fantasy didn't have to be three-dimensional. I can remember doing adapting a script in which the point of it was that two people from the vast future are back here now behaving. Now, physically, they don't look any different, but the idea is different. And that's if you were clever, that's what you did. The notion of, physical changes, the kinds of things you see in the movies today with computer graphics and everything else, was not done in early television. The wildest thing they would do was the third eye, you know.
An interview with Ernest Canoy recorded for the Archive of American Television in October of 1998. You are listening to An Hour of Science Fiction on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. An hour broadcast of Exploring Tomorrow, which deals with characters called the Canoys, a very probable homage to sci-fi writer Canoy. This episode called Flashback, from October 29th, 1958, on the Mutual Broadcasting System. Science fiction editor John Campbell Jr. hosts.
This story really is an adventure of the mind. We don't know very much about the mind, a lot less than the psychologists pretend they do. In particular, we know very little about those peculiar qualities of mind that have made it possible for some individuals to see things at a great distance, either in space or in time. But these incidents have happened.
This is our father's room, Captain Thompson. Just make yourself comfortable.
You let me know.
Of course, the minute there's any news. Now, don't worry, your wife will be fine. Would you like a cup of coffee, Captain? You look rather worn out.
Oh, no, no, thanks. I would like a cup, thanks. I haven't had time to eat since yesterday.
Well, just sit down and I'll be right back with one.
You do look beat,
huh? Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't see the glare from that lamp.
First kid?
Yes, yes.
Oh, well, you have three of them like I have.
I was out at the base, started for town here. As soon as she phoned, she was leaving for the hospital, but still takes 40 minutes to get in.
You part of that rocket business?
The space medicine experimental.
See, is that where they're using you guys as guinea pigs? I read they were even trying telepathy.
I'm sorry, I can't talk about it.
Oh, but I read it in the paper.
Well, I'm sorry, I still can't talk about it. Doesn't that doctor have anything to do but stand around and wait? I'm going to talk to
him. Oh, relax, you can't do anything. Here, the doctors can do something, even the nurses can do something. Fathers can't do anything. You might as well get used to it.
Yeah, I guess so.
Why don't you try to get some sleep? Close your eyes and lean back. Might be hours yet.
Yeah, maybe you're right. Feels good to have my eyes closed. 28 hours. Tension, emotion, new technique.
Here's a nice hot cup of coffee for you, Captain.
Oh, he's conked out already. Maybe you just better let him sleep.
No mental barrier. Future.
He seems to be dreaming. I never saw a man look so worn out.
Go back. Go back into the woods.
No point in waking him.
No, no. Leave him be.
Get the kids and the old people back. You hear me? Over there? Get them back. Back.
Brush pile. I seen him go down. There. What'd I tell you? Thompson. Harvey, you hit one.
What?
It's me, Grant, and Diego. Don't you know us? Hey, look at his forehead, Diego. He must have run spang into a tree limb.
Where am I? What's going on?
Oh, he really gave himself a knock. Hey, Harvey. Hey, let's go to the woods again. You gotta get out of here. You got hard, Diego. Them bugs will be in here in 15 minutes.
What?
You just heard us hush up and fall. We've no time to talk now.
Cave.
Pretty good, eh? We all just sort of stumbled onto it.
Sit down, Harvey. Bandage that head of yours while we talk. Clanton, tell them about your end of it first.
Well, I left you with your covering guard. Moved the rest all back through the brush, Harvey. We didn't have a bit of trouble at all. When I got the men flung around this spot here, it's a natural for defense, Harvey. There's trees so thick you can't see through them unless they come over a treetop height. Then I went back to see about you and the boys, and I met Korshank and Swenson. They told me Talbot and Guido was burned and you was lost.
You came for me?
Diego, he was still there looking around for you. I just helped him, that's all. And just as we found you, a patrol of the bugs came along the road there, at the edge of the woods, shooting into it. You know how to do.
Oh, hold still.
Anyhow, we set up camp here. Oh, we're a good 2 mile back in, safe enough for an hour or two.
There, fixes you. Now, about my end of it, Harvey. Either women, children, the old people rounded up before the patrol that spotted us hit. I don't think the Kinnoys even had a chance to count us. I don't think they even guess us to be a party as large as we are. After all, they've cleaned up everything but a few stragglers south of the Great Lakes and west of Denver. Anyway, I got them all back through the woods, and I've set up a separate camp for them about 500 yards back in. Your dad was a big help, by the way. He practically carried your wife most of the trip. I'm afraid it was maybe too much for him.
My wife...
Now, sit where you are. You can't do anything about her anyway. And there's no reason to expect complications. She had your first son without trouble, didn't she?
Yeah, but that was in the hospital.
Will you forget your wife for 5 minutes? There's 238 other people here who need you right now. I was giving my report.
Go on.
It's better. Now, the old people are tired, and so are the kids. But the kids will recover. We've got straight woods behind us, and there's about a 4-day supply of food left. The question is, can we make the Kedeko in that time?
My men can get along right well on half rations.
Fighting and night marching all the way? And what about my bunch? The young women and the older kids will be all right. The younger kids we can take turns carrying, but the older men and women...
Maybe we won't chase us clear to where the old Canadian border used to be. We hit thick brush before that.
You know they will. We have to go deep into the north woods or they'll follow us. That's what's behind this whole Kinoid offensive. They've got to exterminate us inside of the next few years, or their own mutated virus diseases will win the war for us. Half the last few Kinoids have been sick and dying.
I wish I was sure that is you are, Maria.
Well, if I'm not sure, it doesn't matter. Here's a map. Now, here we are now, Harvey. 60 miles from the border.
Yes, I see. Well, what do you want me to do?
Do? Are you sick, Harvey? You're in command of this group. Or did that hit on the head knock your brain completely silly? You have to tell us what to do, Planter and me, with our groups.
But it must be my head. I don't seem to remember. If you could just let me think for a while.
Think? We've got 2 hours until sundown. And if you want to survive, we've got to head for the border tonight. Are you telling us you aren't fit to command this bunch of ours?
I'm sorry.
All right. You better take over, Clanton.
Why not you?
You know I can't handle the men. Well, we'll get your group and my group moving as fast as the sun's down. They've all been fed. But, Harvey, whatever's wrong with you, you better get over it quick. Because there's 239 people here who'll never reach Ketico without you in charge. I promise you that. I wish we could move the group by road or across farmland.
Why not?
Why not? You want the Kinoids to spot us.
Maria, what are the Kinoids?
You know, I do believe you mean that.
I do. I
never heard of amnesia like this before. Look, you know you're Harvey Thompson, don't you?
Yes.
And you know we're in what used to be Minnesota, heading north on foot toward the Ketico Superior National Forest on the Canadian border, don't you?
Yes, yes.
But you don't know the Kinoids spotted our first attempts at space flight and moved in to wipe us out.
No. But why did they?
Why, they're from Alpha Centauri, the nearest sun with inhabitable planets by our standards. We'd have headed there next.
Well, couldn't anyone explain to them that we wouldn't take their world?
Wouldn't we? What makes you so sure? Anyway, this is the way it worked out. Now, if little groups like ours can survive long enough, the Kinoids will be decimated by their own mutated diseases. They'll have to pull back. We can build again and then go after them.
Are they really bugs?
Oh, it's just a name some soldiers gave them. No, they're almost human, but not quite. Now do you remember?
I don't know.
Harvey, I shouldn't tell you this, but I'm fond enough of you to want you whole and sensible again for your own sake, aside from...
Aside from what, Maria?
Aside from the fact that there's only one man in this group that all the rest will obey without question, and that's you. So far, Clanton and I haven't told anyone that you aren't still giving the orders. Think about that, Harvey. Because if you can't pull us through to safety, nobody can. Remember that.
Maria, Maria, where's my wife? I haven't had a chance to see her.
No time for that now. Clanton just came in. We're all ready for that council that you called.
Council?
Come along. These people can't know yet you're not directing.
Ready and willing, Maria.
Sit down, Harvey. How are the men, Clanton?
Worn out. How are the non-combatants?
Too tired to eat breakfast, most of them. I've left orders for them all to get something in them before they try to sleep.
My...
Your wife and son are fine, Harvey. She walked partway and rode in the litter when she got tired. Your father is in much worse shape. He'll insist on helping her.
Scouts are back in. Got a little stretch of open territory ahead. No way to avoid it.
Kinoids waiting for us?
That's right. About a patrol. They couldn't figure we'd come this way or there'd be more. As it is, we got to get through them fast. They'll be calling for help.
How fast?
You ready to take over, Harvey?
I just wondered, how fast?
15 minutes, if we're lucky. And there's 300 yards of open across.
Mm-hmm.
Then we're in thick brush for at least 10 miles.
Well, it's best, I suppose, to hit them at twilight. They won't come after us in the dark.
Not into brush. Not even with air support.
What's the ground like?
Give me this stick here. The wood shuts out like this. And it's metal, both sides. From this point to where they're sitting.
What's that drumming mean?
Nothing. They do that morning, noon, and evening. When there's nothing else to do.
What's been in position?
I got them laid out in the grass in a half circle, like you said. Halfway clear around them bugs.
All right, give me the whistle.
Would you mind letting us talk by ourselves for a minute? I want a private word with Harvey.
All right with me.
What is it?
You have to move the group right away?
Yes, why?
Some of mine can't.
Well, how bad are they?
Pretty bad. They need a day or two of complete rest, right now.
We can't wait, Maria. We just can't.
That's what I was afraid of.
The Kinoids will be right at our backs at dawn. If they can keep after us and harry us, they'll wear us all down eventually. And we can't go on fighting for every little clearing. We've got to lose them now. But who is it? Which ones can't go on? Not the children. Not my boy.
No. Not your wife or your boy or any of that group. They've all been worn down by this march, but they're young enough to bounce back. It's the old people that don't.
The old?
Yes. We've got 10 older women, 3 older men, including your father, Harvey. They can't go any farther.
Well, not Dad. Why, he's in good shape for his age.
That's just it, for his age. Under ordinary conditions, you don't notice how quickly an old person tires because they're always catching little rests. On a march like this, though...
We can't just leave them. We can't...
I'm sorry, Harvey. Lives or the rest of the group. And you're in command.
But the Kinoids would find them before noon tomorrow, and old people with nothing to defend themselves with. The older people have sons and daughters in the group, too. They'd never stand for abandoning their parents.
It's up to you. Harvey, I'm sorry. If you want me, I'll be over there with Clanton.
Sleeping. You were having some nightmare there.
Oh. What is it, nurse?
A boy, Captain Thompson. You're the father of a boy.
Oh. I have to carry him. Oh, that's the older one. He's all right. Pardon me. I'm still groggy, I guess. A boy. Oh, where is he? How's my wife?
Oh, your wife's just fine. She's still in recovery, and you can talk to her in a few minutes.
Ah, good.
Your son's in an incubator. He's just a little bit lightweight. You can see him in a minute, too.
Good.
The doctor will talk to you shortly, but will you come down the hall right now? We'll get the birth certificate filled out.
Oh, sure.
You can sit right there, Captain Thompson, on the side of the desk. Now, what name have you and your wife picked out for a son?
Name? Let's see. Oh, yes, Harvey. Harvey Walter Thompson, Jr.
Harvey Walter... Captain Thompson?
Yes?
Well, Captain Thompson, of course we'll put down whatever you want, but I notice on the admittance slip here your wife's name is down as Mrs. John W. Thompson. Your name is...
John, that can't be right. Now, Harvey was my wife's choice. She had the name all... My name is John.
Yes, that's what we have down here on the admittance slip.
My son's name is Harvey.
Just plain Harvey Walter Thompson, no junior.
Hmm.
It's easy to be confused. You'd be surprised at some of the fathers. Captain Thompson, are you all right?
All right. I'm all right.
Well, then if you'll sign here.
Yes.
And now it's official. You've got a son to take care of you in your old age, Captain Thompson.
Yes. To make the decision.
Are men first, scientists later. The fact of being a man means that they have human emotions, human needs, wills, desires. It's hard for a scientist, as it is for any other man, to see his whole life orientations, his deepest beliefs, knocked flat. When Einstein's theories of relativity were first established, there was one of the major astrophysicists who committed suicide. All he believed had been demolished. Are our scientists to be expected to be any more able to take the shattering blow that the reality of clairvoyance would mean than the other people of our society? There have been incidents, but the scientists don't like them. I don't think any of us do, but they're there.
Exploring Tomorrow, on Tuned to Yesterday, one of the latest surviving broadcasts from the series on Mutual, heard on October 29th, 1958. And so closes this hour of science fiction on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVillier. It's been a pleasure.